Well, this is our third annual Prophet's Wives Luncheon, and several years ago, my wife, who had a burden for ladies in the church who are either married to a gentleman in our Bible Institute, goes regularly to the Bible Institute, or ministers full-time, and around here, you don't have to be, quote, in the ministry to minister full-time. There are a lot of people here that minister. That may not hold the title of pastor, because that's not the important thing. And we realized that we wanted to encourage our ladies. And about the same time, Amy went to a luncheon or a meeting with Nancy Motley, heard Nancy Motley speak on the topic of the wife of a prophet, and realized that was confirmation that we needed to have her come and speak to our ladies on this topic. So this is our third year in a row to do this. We just want to say we appreciate you ladies. I know from experience that I cannot do the things that I do in the ministry if it weren't for a good supporting wife, that really we minister together. And we just want to tell you thank you for allowing your husbands to do what they do, and for you doing what you do as well around here in ministry. So we want to spoil you a little bit. Once a year isn't much, but it's better than nothing, I guess, you know. So, as you know, if you've been here before, you'll have a great lesson, some time for questions and answers, and also a nice lunch in here to just say that we do love and appreciate you. So we've asked Nancy to come back again. You won't be disappointed. Of course, Brother Duane Motley, he is in charge of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. We just had a wonderful legislative day on Tuesday of this week, and Nancy was honored for 25 years of service as our lobbyist to New York State, and they're a blessing. I don't know if you realize things, but little things, but make a difference. Duane, who knows Governor Pataki, who obviously is not our governor anymore, but worked with Governor Pataki, talked to him sometime last year, I believe it was, and Nancy, correct me if I'm wrong on any of these things, but about a educational tax credit for homeschoolers, private schoolers, okay, just to get back. Well, anyway, went through all the things it had to go through, and it came out, in the end, it came out for a tax credit of $330 per school-aged child in New York State. So I don't know if you realize that, but you're a benefit. You get a benefit from that. We did $990 because of New Yorkers Duane and Nancy Motley and Tom Stiles and all the folks that work there. See, those things go unnoticed unless you're on, you know, you get informed. And New Yorkers are a great ministry. But anyway, it is what it is because Duane Motley, his dedication, and because of Nancy Motley. And also, let me mention that North Star Bible Institute is here because of Duane Motley. He and Pastor Modlish were pioneered in 1975, North Star Bible Institute, and here we are today. And we owe those folks a lot, a great deal. So, Nancy, we sure do appreciate and love you, and just thank you for being here today.
Well, I tell them, I don't know that our men necessarily couldn't get along without their ministry without. That's probably true. Most of them couldn't find their underwear without them. So, you know how that goes. We did have a great legislative day, and it was so nice to see Duane honored. You know, my husband walks the marble halls without any thank yous, day after day, year after year, and it's not that anybody knows he's there here. Now, the legislators do, of course, but you don't, that he's there. And they say, oh, well, it must be so exciting. No, most people there are against him. Most people over there are not for him. To show you how petty they are, the Senate gave him a proclamation of, like, just some thanks for what he's done for the 25 years. And when they presented it to him, it was all nice and all that. The assembly presented him one, but it was a paper in a little thing. And after we were over, they called him and said, come down, we want to get your picture. And the reason they couldn't give it to him framed is the Democrats in the Assembly, which are controlled by Democrats, would not sign the proclamation. So it took some arm twisting, I guess. Now, isn't that petty? I mean, we're not asking for anything. They were just saying, hey, we recognize that you have been faithful here and that you've been serving your state by being this and that and the other. They finally signed it, but they wouldn't sign it so that it could be presented in frame form on the stage. Just petty. Little boys with toys, that's all they are. Did you get your handouts? Hey, Patty, come on in. You'll need one of the handouts there, all your handouts. I'm going to talk to you today about survival. Survival, as I call it, a prophet's wife. You can say a pastor. I like to use the word prophet because that's what the Bible uses. A prophet is someone that declares God's judgment, God's laws, and that's so I call you the wife of a prophet. And like he says, you don't have to be in some official capacity. Do you realize around here until Dwayne actually went on the church staff that all those years we served just as well, just as strong, and never had any title? We didn't need a title to do what we were going to do. You don't need a title to be a prophet for the Lord. So we're going to talk about it. Now, Andrea was home, and I was saying to her, we were at the office one day, and she came by to take me to lunch, and I said, sit down, Andrea. I said, I've been asked to speak to the wives of future missionaries and preachers and full-time workers. And I said, and I'm assuming most of those are going out away from here. Some will stay, but most of you will go somewhere else. I said, could you think about it and tell me what would be important to say to those ladies? She said, I can tell you right now. I said, do you want to think about it? She said, nope. And she began to name them off, blah, 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 blah. She said, Mama, Mother, she calls me Mother, Mother, if they don't do it in this order, they will fail. So actually, this speech to you today, I filled in, but the points have come from Andrea. And Roman numeral 1 on your outline is, she says, you have to learn to last. Last. Proverbs 17:21. She said, if you don't learn to last, Mother, don't go. She said, there are just some people that shouldn't be on the mission field. And the first reason is because they cannot last. Proverbs 17:22 says, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bone. A merry heart, she said, you have to laugh. Letter A on your outline, you got to laugh with others. Laugh with others. Now, I did not say laugh at others. You know, that's a kid's thing. When you have children in your home or at school, and you see them out there, they're just laughing and going on. Some little kids over here crying. Or some child is upset. That's not laughter. I used to say to my children, fun is when everybody is laughing. When somebody isn't, that's ridicule. We don't do that in this house. So never laugh at others, because fun is when two people or everybody is laughing in the room. In Christendom, I've watched this. I actually was involved in it when I was young. A lot of cutting and hurting is done through humor. You know, you can say things that you think are funny, and they hurt. They stab the soul. We had a man in this church, George Berry's husband, Jerry Berry. We were a team. I don't think any of you remember Jerry. Jerry was just a card now, that's all. He cut up all the time. But Jerry used sarcastic humor. And I got caught up in that with Jerry. And one day, we had three couples over, and Diane Cameron was one of them. And Diane came in, and we were in the kitchen talking. And I said, Diane, you don't look very happy today. She said, I'm not. I didn't want to come. And I said, why would you not want to enjoy the evening of fellowship? She said, I know that Jerry Berry will cut me and hurt me all evening. And I watched that thing, and I thought, am I doing that too? Now, some of you don't have that bent. Some of you, like Miss Friedel, they're real sweet in nature. But we're not all like that, are we? I feel sorry for George Grace. We're so much alike in that. You don't know what goes through our mind when things said, just all these fun things to say and these silly things to say or these cutting things. I mean, we know how to cut back and cut back quick. You have to really let God control your tongue. But you have to learn to laugh and enjoy, especially if you're on a foreign field, you have to laugh. Letter B, You have to learn to laugh at yourself. Now, this is the hard one. The worst person to be angry at yourself. Have you figured that out? Don't you hate to just, you'll need one of each of the hands. Don't you just hate to mess up? Don't it make you angry at yourself? However, you better learn to laugh at yourself. How many was at the retreat up at the Letourneau this year? Did you hear Wendy Stiles? I didn't know that girl had a funny side. Did you hear her tell it about her experiences in Japan? Well, y'all know what she gave. I was laughing till I was hurting because of all the, I'll call it, misfunctions that she gets into. You might as well learn to laugh at yourself when you go somewhere else. By the way, when I moved here from the South, I do not sound like I sound now. You think I sound Southern, but I come right out of Cajun country. I'm from the swamps, Cajun country. I moved here, I was the laughing stock of this town. And people would comment about it. And I'd just laugh and have a good time. And it opened doors for me, and it didn't. But every now and then, this would bother me. I would go in a store, and I'd say, ask a clerk, and they'd say, oh, now did you know? And they would mock me. I'd straighten up, and I'd say, I didn't hear anything funny, did you? No, boy. Now I thought, why am I doing that? They're just trying to be funny. But you understand, even now when they do it to me, I want to go, whoa, who do you think you are? You know, you understand what I mean? You don't have to go to Africa. You may get sent to the swamps of Louisiana, just where I come out of. They're going to laugh at you, so you might as well laugh at yourself. And when you're on a farm field, you just mess up all time. You don't know where you're going, what you're doing, and you can't speak the language. I know when I went and stayed with Andrew, with one of her first baby, and I said, Andrew, how do I know if I do something wrong, Mama? She said, Mama, Mother, you're going to know it. They will let you know. She was right. I mean, you know, first time I went and picked up two, and I could only get one. Slapped my hand, took that one. I went, okay, you can have it, lady. I won't fight you over whatever it is. And I found out later you could only have one because there wasn't enough to go around back then, and they wanted everybody, you know, so I'd have to go to the store 10 times a day to get enough to feed a supper. But you don't understand, just laugh. That's all you can do, you know. I could have gotten my feelings hurt, and it just, you can't do it. When you go, learn to laugh at yourself. And people that cannot, the women, men are out into the economy. Your husbands are busy, and they learn to pick up the language quickly. They adapt to the culture quickly, whether it's in America. I don't care if you go to the West Coast. It's a different culture. And they adapt quickly. But we're home, and we're taking care of the children, and we're busy, and we're not out with them. And so here we are 10 years behind. And if you're older, you're about 20 years behind. It's harder to learn a language. It's harder to adapt to a culture. Look at all of our Ukraine ladies. The younger children just mill right in. The 20s and 30s, they're slowly doing it. But these old folks, you see them in the store with their babishka on and their little coats, and their grandchildren interpret for them. They will never speak it. Grace said to me, she said, Grandmother, somebody asked me something, I spoke in English. She said, now, Grandmother, you can't talk to them like that. They don't speak English. You got to speak Czech, she said. I said, Grace, I apologize. You tell her I said so-and-so and so. I said, because I can't speak Czech. She said, I can teach you Czech just like that. I was thinking, I wish that was true. But you just might as well learn to laugh at yourself. Andrea had another missionary in a town close to Andrea and them. That woman ended up in a fetal position in bed and had to be brought home. They're working in the mission board in Chicago, doing wonderful now. She could not adapt on the mission field. But she would not integrate herself with the people. She kept herself isolated, and she had no sense of humor. You could even tell her something funny. She just had no sense of humor. And Andrea said to me, Mama, when I first met her, I knew she wasn't going to last. She wasn't going to last. So if you have that personality, my advice to you is think very seriously. Talk to your husband and say, I don't think I can make it on a farm field. You say, well, I hinder his. No, God can lead him in the ministry. His family comes first. We had a couple in this church getting married. I know that the girl cannot handle a farm field. I know that. I've known the child since she was born. And I wasn't going to say anything. I don't believe in interfering. I have a saying,
You come to me. I don't come to you. Any of you say, will you go talk to my mom? They don't come to me. I'm keeping my mouth shut. Now, when I was younger, I'd have done that like a stupid idiot. Now, I wait. But we had a guest speaker, and the speaker was saying, I'm preaching to you. It was during, I made it during the missions costume. If you know of any reason any of these people should not go to the field, and you don't talk to them, God's going to hold you accountable. I hear you. So I caught the man, and I said, I want to ask you a question. I want you to only answer me yes or no, and don't say another word. I said, are you planning on marrying this girl and taking her to blank? He went, yes, I am. I said, I'm going to speak to you. I don't want you to answer me. You're not accountable to me after what I say. But you, and I told him, these are the reasons this will, she should not go. And this is what will happen if you take this girl to the mission field. Well, about 2 weeks later, he broke it off. And so I'm like, oh, now I'm all set, thinking, oh, now. So I was Andrea knows the situation. I was telling, she said, they owe you a debt of gratitude, Mother, that they will never know. They will never know. If you don't have the strength to be in certain areas, don't go there. You don't, you know, you understand what I'm trying to say to you? And I know you good wives, instead of saying, I can't do this. Now, that's been a hard thing for me to do. As I've aged, I'm nearly 70 years old, and it just drives me batty. There's just certain things I can't do anymore. With ease. And I have to say to my husband, I can't do that, Dwayne. I don't have the physical stamina to do that. And he's like, okay. I thought, well, shoot, I thought maybe you'd get upset or something. He's like, okay, I'll get so-and-so. See, it didn't bother him at all. Because before, I could stay up till midnight and work on into the morning and get up, and I can't do it anymore. I'm physically tired now. And I have some physical disabilities that are being surgically corrected. Thank God, my first shoulder is going next week. See, my knee's done. I'm falling apart here. But I can't raise my arms. Now, my poor husband has kept me put my coats on. I'm like some kind of angel walking around. Blah, blah, blah. And no, God's saying, see, it's time to let others help you when you need a help. This is the time. Do you know how hard it was for me to go to 3 women and say, would you come in the week I'll be just ironing my husband's shirt? I've been walking around for 2 weeks doing everything. I'm going to be in a sling 3-4 weeks. I've been walking around doing everything one-handed to see what I could do. Let me tell you what you can't do. You can't put on pantyhose in one hand. I don't care how you try. So it slacks from now. And the other one is you can't iron a man's dress shirt. You can't do it, you know. So I went to 3 women, and for 3 weeks I lined them up. And they were like, wonderful. We were wanting to do something, you know. But I'm thinking, boy, I'm a slime ball here. They have to go back. You understand how stupid we are? So if you can't take this, and if you can't do it, then don't tell it to your husband. And by the way, don't do it. And you know what? Don't ever feel the need to defend yourself, to defend yourself. If a person disagrees with you or criticizes you, then just agree. Drives them nuts. I learned that one long ago. In fact, Tom Stiles is a teaser. He teases, and I like Tom. Tom's got a great personality, and he teases. And he'll do all, and I'll say, yeah, you're right, and just laugh. He's like, well, no, nothing gets to you, does it? No, not really. Not really. And so if you just laugh and agree, and try to teach that to your children. When other kids are teasing, laugh with them and say, yeah, that's right. It just disarms them. Where can you go with that? If you laugh and agree, and so you won't have any trouble. Just laugh. Somebody read Psalms 126, verse 2 for me. 126, verse 2. Whoever gets it, read it.
Then was our mouth filled with laughter, and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them.
Oh, read it again. Now listen to what this is saying. Who's getting the praise because of this type of laughter? Do it again.
Then was our mouth filled with laughter, and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them.
It fakes out the enemy. Did you get that? It said these people are laughing, and they have the joy of the Lord in their heart, and the enemy says, look about what the Lord's done for them.
Have you ever been in a real formal church, at an old dead church? You just come out there and you're like, oh, forget that. I mean, you know, and then you come and they're like, oh, wow, there's joy and happiness here. And the church grows and the community stands back and says, I don't know what it is, but there's something going on over there. Or if you've got a happy family, they say, wow, look at that family. I don't know what it is, but I'd like a family just like the God uses your merriment and your laughter that comes from the Lord. So letter A was laugh with others. Letter B was laugh at yourself. And letter three, letter C, all laughter is not from the heart. All laughter is not from the heart. Ecclesiastes 2:2. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? All laughter is not from the heart. Let me tell you two examples. For you that don't know, I'm a psychiatric nurse, and I worked in what was called in my day criminally insane. Now they call it forensic medicine. And there is a diagnosis of hebephrenic schizophrenic. A hebephrenic means constant laughter. And they laugh all the time. They go, even when they try to speak, they'll stop and then they just go back to laughing. It's called hebephrenic. It's not from the heart. They're mentally deranged, and they laugh. And it just drives you nuts after a while. These people just laugh and laugh. It probably drives them nuttier. And then they can't help it. They just laugh and laugh and laugh. And then there's the laughter of what I call a dead spirit. Joan Barlow and I went to California. Joan had a son that died out there, and we went out when he was dying. And one of his friends got us tickets to go see an opening night of Durante, it was called. It was about the life of Jimmy Durante. It was with the red carpet and all the stars coming. And when we got our seats, we were sitting right down among all the movie stars. This boy worked backstage, and he got us tickets right down. I mean, we literally were right. I didn't know. I knew Madge, the picker-upper lady, with the paper towel. I didn't know Mickey Rooney. I didn't know anybody else. Now, Joan knew the young ones. I didn't know anybody else. And so we were sitting there, and they take a break in the middle. You know, you have this so many acts, you take a break. And we're out in the mezzanine walking around, and these people are just laughing. And I said, look at them, Joan. The sound of laughter is there, but it's all fake. There was no joy. And they were just laughing. And I felt like it was eerie. It just kind of made your skin crawl. And I didn't see a person. Joan looked at me. She said, we're the two prettiest people here. I said, you're right. And she didn't mean clothes, even though we were about the best dressed there, too. Most of them had on torn jeans, you know, all that stuff. But I'm just saying, she was talking about there was nothing in the face. There was no joy. They were just kind of, and they were, while they were talking to you, they were doing this way, you know, they were just, it was just all fake. It's fake laughter. So all laughter doesn't come from the heart. And it's just all vanity. Ecclesiastes 7:6. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. This also is vanity. It's vanity. I think that's what happens on Friday and Saturday night at bars. Now, I've never been to a bar. Had no reason to go to a bar. But I've been in restaurants now, and I see it. These people are just loud. You can't hardly talk. In fact, we'll ask if the table's near. We wait. You can't even speak. But they're just laughing and talking. You just watch them. It's just vanity. There's really no joy. So don't plan to go anywhere if you can't laugh at yourself. And, Janice, you're not going to have any trouble out of this because you can laugh. You can laugh at anything. I like old Janice. She can laugh at anything. But if you have to be able to laugh at yourself. Number two, these are right in order like Andrew did. She said if you don't do them this way, you're not going to succeed, is you have to forgive. You have to forgive. Psalms 32, 1 and 2. Turn with me there. Psalms 32, 1 and 2. All right. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man unto whom the Lord imputeth not, imputeth, if I can get it right. and in whose spirit there is no guile. If your sin is not imputed from the Lord because he has forgiven you, you are blessed. Now I'm going to turn that around. Blessed is the person who you can forgive. That's what that's saying. Blessed is men God forgives. That applies in human relationships too. Blessed is the man when you can forgive. Make you a note, you can look it up later, Romans 4:6-8. Romans 4:6-8. It implies the same thing. Letter A. Forgiveness is not a feeling. It's a decision you make. Forgiveness is not a feeling. It is a decision that you make. People think that we get our feelings hurt, so we have a feeling, and that we think that forgiveness, there's a feeling. Now, sometimes there's a release when you forgive somebody, but it's not a feeling. It is a decision that you make. Turn with me, please, to Luke chapter 5, verse 35. Luke 5, 35. Luke 6. But love ye your enemies. I'm reading 35. Luke 6:35. But love ye your enemies and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great. And you shall be the children of the highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you shall be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet, withal it shall be measured to you again. A lot of times people use this for tithing, but this is true in anything. Anything. If you forgive, it'll come back to you. If you forgive, it'll come back to you. Letter B. Forgiveness is not for the other person, it's for you. Forgiveness is for the is not for the other person. It's for you. This is one of our greatest fallacies about forgiving. We think, well, I'm going to forgive that person, right? Is that what we say? I'll forgive her, or I'll forgive him. Even though you are, it's for you. You see, the cleansing comes from you. You're the one holding the balance, not the other person. Half the time, they don't even know it. I found that out a long time ago. Something I think, not long ago, I hurt somebody's feelings, I thought, and I went to that person, they said, was I there? Was I there? She said to me, yes, and I did that, and I apologize. Okay, well, okay. We just got, she didn't even remember being there. Now that really hurt my feelings, you know. You understand, though, that it's us that has the problem, not the other person. Now, sometimes the other person can, and they'll come and tell you off and blah, blah, blah. Still, it's for you if you can forgive. In fact, I had to say to a woman at the last Christmas program, I'm sorry that you feel that way, because I have made this clear. I've apologized to you. Now, the woman was wrong, but I said to her, look, you think you're right, and I accept that. And I apologize if anybody hurt your feelings here, me or anybody else. And all I can do to ask you to forgive me if we have. Well, I'll never forgive y'all. I said, now, wait a minute. That's up to you and God. We've done all we can do here. The rest of it's up to you. And you see, I'm free. I don't have anything here. The problem is her. She's the one that carries bitterness and unforgiveness in her heart. But you need to make sure. And by the way, even though she's wrong, I don't care. If she thinks she's right, then I'm sorry. It's okay. I don't want to hurt you. God bless you. You know, life is so short. I don't want anybody. I just want us to have a ministry of inclusion, and I want us all to work together. And I want Patty to be Patty, and I want Lee to be you, and I want you to be you, and you to be you. I don't want you to be me, and you don't want me to be you. And let's just work together and using the personality God gave us, you know? And then we're going to be successful. So I have nothing to defend, you know? It's for me. And if you don't forgive, you're going to become bitter. And you will live with bitterness. And you can't get it out of you. It'll cause physical problems and psychological problems. I believe most of America's problems today are bitterness. Mm-hmm. I lived with my mother
until my mother died. And my mother carried bitterness all of her life. My mother couldn't let it go. And my mother never said a kind word to anybody. You might know a grandmother like that.
Mm-hmm.
Janice has got a grandmother just like that. And she's from the South, too.
Yeah.
And my daddy was married to my mother 57 years. I never heard my mother say a kind word to my daddy. Ever. And my daddy adored her. He knew how to love. And he defended her. He knew all of her good points. My mother would die for you. She knew how to, and her way of loving you was to do for you. She couldn't say it verbally. She could, but she would do for you. That's how she showed love. And it just kept her. My mother had every kind of medical problem that could be listed on the medical record. And it, I know it was bitterness. Now, as my mother come to live with me the last 9 years of her life, and I know my mother was molested as a girl. Now, my mother never told me that. I'm a psychiatric nurse. I pick up a lot of things. Plus, in that time and era, it wasn't, you didn't go tell anybody. She had a stepfather. And I brought it right up to my mother. And I said, Mama, I believe this has just haunted you all your life. You know, let that go. You only have a few years left. And she went off on how evil he was and that he tried to. She never could say he molested her. But if you have, if you're carrying bitterness, a lot of women that have gone through child molestation carry bitterness. It'll destroy you. It'll destroy you. And you have to be the one to forgive that other person, and yes, that person, because it's for you, not for them. Do you understand? And if you carry the bitterness, it'll lock you. It'll make you a prisoner. Many ministries are ruined because pastors' wives can't let go of bitterness. They can't laugh at themselves. They get their feelings hurt, and they get bitter. And then they hold it. It just begins to permeate the church. It'll destroy a home. I don't know many people like my father that would just love her and smile and never walk by her. He didn't touch her, pat her, kiss her. And she'd say, get away from me. Do you have to touch me every time you walk by me? I said to Daddy one time, I had children. I said, Daddy, if you haven't thought about just slapping Mama, he said, don't you ever speak like that about your mother. And off he goes, telling me all her good points. I thought, I'm witnessing love here. I'm witnessing real love here. And my mother would say to me, I wish I could be like you and your daddy. Y'all are just happy all the time, and you just love anything and everybody. Mama, you could. Let it go, Mama. Well, you know, sometimes hurts just can't be let. Yes, they can, Mama. Yes, they can. And by the way, has nothing to do with the other person. You decided to let it hurt you, Mama. You did nothing wrong. But you decided to let something hurt you. Don't do it. Let it go. And, you know, it's a decision you have to look in the mirror and make. And if you can't forgive, you're going to have real trouble on the mission field because nobody's going to like you. And by the way, you think all churches are like First Bible Baptist Church. They ain't even close. And you go to these small churches, guess who they pick apart? Tell me, who do you think they pick apart? The preacher's wife. And the preacher's kids. By the way, pick on me, but I might beat you up if you start talking about my kids. That's who they're going to pick on. And they're unmerciful about it. I can't tell you. Most of you have been new and saved in this ministry. It's not like that. Here, Penny Grace is free to be Penny Grace. Her kids are free to be kids, mess up, do what they want to do. They can miss church and go play in the tournament. If they did that in some church, it would split the church wide open. You better learn to forgive. You better learn to laugh at it and let it roll off of you. And letter C, forgiveness doesn't mean trust. Letter C, forgiveness doesn't mean trust. Trust has to be earned. If that person that has harmed you or that person that's offended you, you don't have to trust them. Forgive them and back off. Just watch them. Say, God bless you. And in time, some people rebuild trust. And it comes back and you become good friends. And then others, never happens. Never happens. You know, the old three strike. I figure, here's what I used to say to my children, and I apply that to adult relationship. First time, I think it's a mistake. I just look at it when everybody messes up. second time is stupidity. You did it once, you should have learned. Third time, you're done. You're done. You're done. I'm going to back off from you. I mean, that's your problem. I'm going to back off, and I'm going to say, God bless you. Go do whatever God wants. But you're going to have to earn my trust again. You know where I'm going? So, and that's where some people, they think, well, if I forgive them, then I've got to pal around with them. No, you don't. Let them earn your trust. Let them earn your trust. And letter E, don't spend any time getting even. Don't waste your time. That's just what they want. Don't spend any time getting even. We're on letter E. What was D? Forgiveness means that you're not going, I skipped it. Forgiveness means you're not going to let another's action hinder you or build a barrier between the two of you. You're not going to let, that's what forgiveness is. You're not going to let another's actions, that something they've done, hinder you.
Can you say that again?
Yes. Forgiveness means you're not going to let another's actions hinder you or even build a barrier between you. I told you about the woman, the last Christmas program. This woman wasn't from our church, by the way. Caused such a scene, you have no idea what happened that night backstage. It was horrible. And she came back another night. And I saw her. So I ran up to her and I said, I'm so glad you come. And I'm glad there's no hard feelings. And I want you to know that I love you in the Lord. She went, I love you too. And I thought she was going to faint with her throat. Trying to say it. I laugh. I laugh at a lot of things. I like to laugh in her face. But it put her in such a position, people were around. Then she walked off and I heard her say, the next time I ever come here, I'm watching out for her. Brenda Green was standing there with me. We just bust out laughing. Hey, she's going to make put a barrier. I'm not going to let it happen. Do you understand? I'm not going to pursue her. But when she came back, my thing was to go say, I'm glad you're here. I don't want any hard feelings. And I love you in the Lord. Right? And I've seen her since. I've been, hey, you know, good to see you. God is so good. She was forced to have to come to me to get a costume that I'm the only one in town that has. She hated to do that so bad, I could tell. But it worked out really well, and she began to relax a little and not be so rigid. And not that she doesn't like me. She just wants to be around me. But you understand, it's her. It's not me. The barrier's not there. I'm not going to let somebody's actions do that to me. When I was younger, I did. I wish I knew what I knew when I was your age. I was so stupid and so judgmental and so prideful and so right all the time. And if you didn't live my way, it was the wrong way. You know, you remember in my younger years, I was trying to die about marijuana. I mean, I wish I was as relaxed and enjoyed people. I don't care who you are. I mean, I go down to jail. It doesn't bother me anymore. But I watched this woman. She's a victim of her own bitterness. You know, don't do it. Now letter E, do not spend time getting even. Do not spend time getting even. It's a waste of your energy. You can't get even. They'll always one-up you. They'll always one-up you because they're thinking about it. She spent the first day packing her belongings into boxes, crates, and suitcases. On the second day, she had the movers come and collect her things. On the third day, she sat down for the last time at their beautiful dining room table by candlelight, put on some soft background music, and feasted on a pound of shrimp, a jar of caviar, and a glass of iced tea. When she had finished, she went into each and every room and deposited a few half-written shrimp shells, dipped in caviar, into the hollow of the curtain rods. Then she cleaned up the kitchen and left. When her husband returned with his new girlfriend, all was bliss for the first few days. Then slowly the house began to smell. They tried everything, cleaning and mopping and airing the place. Vents were checked for dead rodents and carpets were steam cleaned. Air fresheners were hung everywhere. Exterminators were brought in to set off gas canisters, during which they had to move out for a few days, and in the end they had to replace their expensive wool carpeting. Nothing worked. People stopped coming over to visit. Repairmen refused to work in the house. The maid quit. Finally, they could not take the stench any longer and decided to move.
A month later, even though they had cut their price in half, they could not find a buyer for their stinky house. Word got out, and eventually even the local realtors refused to return their telephone calls. Finally, they had to borrow a huge sum of money from the bank to purchase a new place. The ex-wife called the man and asked how things were going. He told her the saga of the rotten house. She listened politely and said she missed her whole home terribly, and would he be willing to reduce her divorce settlement in exchange for getting the house back? Knowing his ex-wife had no idea how bad the smell was, he agreed on the price, and that was about one-tenth of what the house should have been worth. But only if she was to sign the papers that very day. She agreed, and within the hour, his lawyer delivered the paperwork. Now, is this getting even? A week later, the man and his new girlfriend stood smirking as they watched the movers' company packing everything to take to their new home, including the curtain rods. Don't spend time. I mean, that's the ultimate roster. I've given you two handouts that you can read at your own when you have time. I'm sorry about the bad print on this one, but it was bad when I copied it. But it's true. It's about forgiveness. And I thought this one was, you'll really enjoy this one. So take time to read it. Take it home with you. And read it on forgiveness. Number three. Andrew says, first you're going to learn to laugh at yourself. Second, you're going to forgive. Are you going to? And by the way, her best friend a couple of times heard her on the mission field. Andrew lets it go, and they're still best friends. And number three, she says, learn to make garbage soup. Learn to make garbage soup. Now, what do we mean by that? What do we mean by that? Letter A, hospitality. Hospitality. Hospitality is a special gift from God. Romans 6, chapter 12, verse 6 and verse 13 tells us that. Hospitality is a special gift from the Lord. Romans chapter 6, or chapter 12, verse 6 and 13. And all cultures, crossing all barriers, have always, in any civilized nation, hospitality has been highly esteemed. It's been something looked up to. In fact, the Jewish laws, when you study Jewish law, with regard to strangers, they're framed, all Jewish law is framed in the spirit of hospitality. Let's turn to Leviticus 19. This is Exodus Leviticus. Leviticus 19. And we're going to read verse 33 and verse 34. Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meter yard, in weight, or in measured, just balances, just weights, a just ephod, and a just hem shall ye have. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe all of my statutes and all my judgments, and do them. I am the Lord your God. If you're going to have hospitality, it says you're going to do things, no unrighteousness. You're going to do justice when people come before you. This is all framed within. You're going to do just balances. You're going to be hospitable. You're going to be kind. And even if you go back before we even had the law, didn't certain people entertain strangers? Tell me somebody entertained a stranger.
Abraham.
What did he do?
He got the...
Yeah, went and killed a cow. I think about that. Now, you know what? We can go grab something quick. Poor folks had to slaughter that lamb. They had to dress her down. They had to cook. That took some time, so those people stayed a while. That wasn't a half-hour visit, is what I'm trying to say. But it was people entertaining strangers, and it happened more than once. And this is a commandment that's given to preachers and missionaries. 1 Timothy 3, 1 and 2. Turn there. This is a commandment given to you. It's not an option. Go to 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy. Oh, you want the Leviticus 19, verses 33 and 34. But let's skip on over here to us today. see what it says. 1 Timothy 3. Everybody got it? This is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work. A bishop must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior. What's next, class? Oh, what is it? Listen to that. Apt to teach and so on. It's a commandment that if your husband is doing a work of a bishop, a teacher, or a missionary, then he's supposed to have this. Now, guess what? Don't get mad when he exercises it. That was a hard adjustment for Amber. She said, Mother, I don't mind Ken bringing people home, but she said, I never know him. She said, one night he brought a drunk in. He looked out and saw this drunk staggering around out there, and he felt bad. He went out and got him, brought him in for supper, gave him a bath, and cleaned him up. She said, here we sat with this drunk at the supper table. She said, oh, well, I guess that's why I love him, because he's like me. See? I don't know that I'd have been quite so gracious about a dirty drunk being brought in. You know what I'm saying? Hey, is that a commandment to us? Is that a commandment to us? And but if that man should have that gift, and that means it's going to come from you, Titus 1. Hebrews, Titus, go back to Titus 1. Okay, and what are we reading here? 7 and 8. Somebody read it out loud.
A bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not soon angry, not given to wine, no striker, not given to filthy lucre, but a lover of hospitality.
Oh, stop right there. What class? Say it together. Keep going. Who's reading? Mary, keep going.
A lover of good men, sober, just, holy.
A lover of good men. This man is going to want to have people in his home. It's up to you to see that it happens. Letter B, use what you have to entertain. Use what you got to entertain. A was hospitality. B is use what you have to entertain. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your house looks like.
I know we think it does. I wish y'all could go to Andrew's house. She's got furniture that they got from base salvage from Germany when they moved. And they've still got the same furniture, except they've had to add some beds as they've had more children.
Have the same furniture. Literally, I've sent material over there and had that old beat-up couch and chair covered twice.
And they're already so dirty, I don't even want to sit down on them. I'm telling you, they look that dirty to me. And if this doesn't bother Andrew, she'll just have everybody in. That furniture's dirty. Now, she keeps it clean. I don't mean she keeps everything dusty and she keeps everything real hard. But I'm like, ooh, I think I'll sit in the floor. It looks cleaner. And, you know, it's just upholstery gets dirty after when that's all they got to sit on. It's a couch and two chairs. One of them's a wooden chair and this other one. And then they bring the kitchen chairs in and they're just old wooden kitchen chairs that's been beat up. I mean, these were from the basement. And now their best friend that they went to the field with, they have this luxury house and all this fancy front. Nobody ever goes over there. Guess where they all are? Hello. Guess where they all are? Over at Andrew's, in the floor, sitting on the dirty couch. It doesn't matter. You know, here they come. They're having a... Take what you got and entertain. Doesn't body it. I'm telling you, it'll work. She said, Mama, if these people isolate themselves and think, well, I got to have this, she said, in fact, the best thing to do is don't have too much more than the native people. I thought that might be a good point. So you entertain what you got. Letter C, be ready to feed at any time. Be ready to feed at any time. Letter C. Don't make me there. Be ready. And that's where the garbage soup. Guess where she got that? Joan Barlow makes what she calls garbage soup. And Anna says, Mama, that's what she actually said. Learn to make Miss Barlow's garbage soup. I left Miss Barlow. And she said, Mama, if you serve garbage soup with love, and a flair, everybody thinks you're wonderful. And what you mean by that, she said, just put it in the pot and then throw a tablecloth on the table and go out and get some stick flowers if you have to, or take some cardboard cut out and make something and just set it and make the table. And she sets up all these little card tables. And I mean, you know, Mama, why don't you do this? How many pies? Just keep making pies, Mama. I'll tell you when to quit. 22 later, I'm quitting, man. That's enough pies. And you know what I'm saying? Just take what you got and just go. And then people just love it. They don't care. They don't care. And they come in, and she said, but serve it with flair, Mama. Serve it with flair. She said, you can decorate it up, you know. And once a week, she has a fancy dinner for her, just her family. Her great-grandmother had a beautiful set of china. And it was, I didn't need it. Jason didn't want it. Blaine's mom didn't need it. So I shipped that sucker to Emily. There was only a place setting of eight. So for the next Christmas, Mom and I kept buying these pieces that you can order off of these from places. And I got her a set of 12. And she sets her table with her china. Till then, she was setting it and using candles with half-broken plates. And now she does it with the china. Oh, the kids just love it. And they have this evening with the family. Okay, usually there's two more, maybe four more. But anyway, you know, they have this thing. And then she said to me, Mama, I was over there. We got this old, I sent her a big old kettle like you make with a big, thick stainless steel body and make stuff. And she was using it for a punch bowl. She said, man, what I really need is like you got, a great big old punch bowl. I have an antique punch bowl. It's this big and the tray on it's about this big. It's all lead glass. Thing's heavy. It's over there. I shipped that sucker to check with all the cups. And now she can put that out. She can feed all that herd. You know, you got a big thing. Why would I want it? You know what I did? People borrowed it for weddings and stuff here. I mean, it's huge. It was huge. And it just sat on a side piece in my dining room doing nothing. You understand? But Andrew puts that fancy punch bowl out. Nobody goes, woo, look at this pretty punch bowl. And she's got, you know, Kool-Aid with a little something in it. And you get the point? She said, Mother, they have to learn to do this. Just serve it. Don't worry about what people think. Just serve it. And you won't have any trouble. Letter E, I'm going to, oh, B. D was serve it with love and flair. So B was use what you have to entertain. C, be ready to feed it any time. And D is serve it with love and flair. 1 Peter 4:9. Put that right after it. Use hospitality one to another without grudging. Got it, class? Grudging. We can entertain and do it grudgingly. We can do it and do it grudgingly. Do it without entertaining. And F, don't worry about what people think about what you have, what your house has, or what you serve. Don't worry about what they think. She said if you're a letter F, don't worry about what people think about your house or what you serve. She said that'll drive you up a wall. She said the thing that gets you the most in foreign countries is everybody wants to see what the Americans have. She said, they'll go in your bathroom, you know, and they'll look. They actually go through the garbage. People will go and go through the garbage to see what the Americans have. She said, don't let it bother you. Don't let it bother you. It'll get you.
E
was, this opens you up to people. When you serve it with love and flair, this opens you up to people.
Oh, okay.
This opens you up to people when you serve it with love and flair. It'll automatically draw people in. Another nice thing Andrea does, if they come in unexpected, that woman puts them to work. She'll say, would you come in here and cut up these? If you'll start cutting these up, and why don't you slice the bread, and you do this and get this, and pretty soon everybody's happy and they're laughing. Or they'll say, well, why don't you move and let me make this? You know, I'm real good at making this. And, okay, they've even trained their check ladies, you know, to bring something after church. Andrea was doing it all. Now they've taught them to bring. That was a big thing. I was there the first Sunday. What do we bring? How big? They've never even brought, like we think of bringing a dish to pass. They didn't know anything about that. And so now they're learning. Now they're like, Andrew, you go. And, you know, what did she say to you? She told me to get out of the kitchen. She was going, okay. So Andrew says, it's all yours. And off she goes. And now, you don't know me. I'd be saying, no, I'll do that. Don't touch my stove, you know. Andrew's like, oh, who cares, Mother, you know. Be like that. You know, it opens you up to people. That's what it is. And then don't worry about what they think. And I gave you a handout on worry. You can read it at your own time. And I also gave you a cute little handout I just thought you might enjoy about dusting, keeping your house dusty. And I thought you might enjoy reading that. Just some little cute things that you can read. Number four. And I want to spend a little extra time on this. Don't go or serve alone.
Roman numeral 4. Don't go or serve a loaf. Letter A, there's strength in pairs.
There's strength in pairs.
Now, I know people go to the mission field, and I know people go off and take over a church, and they do it alone, and I know they can be successful. But John 8:17 says, it is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. Two men is true. There are a lot of good things to be said about not going alone. Letter A, is there strength in pairs? John 8:17. Letter A, don't go alone. Don't serve alone. You notice most of the time if people go to start a new ministry, they'll take a nucleus of people, like maybe 10 people or 10 families from First Bible will leave. And, when Brother Cotton started his, they took one of the bus ministries that was going in, and you got people, and you got already people to fellowship with, and you have a nucleus to start. When you go to a foreign field, sometimes you go and you work with another missionary already there. And then you branch out. The two of you begin to branch out. But now I do know people that go alone. I just know that there are some reasons not to do that. And it can really get to you. There's strength in pairs, letter A. Letter B, when you're down, they lift you up. When you're down, they lift you up. And don't think you're not going to get down. Because you have in your head, you and your husband, these idealistic visions. You're going to go and you're going to have these 10 couples. You're going to start this ministry. Are you going to go on a foreign soil and you're going to you think that they're just going to show up at your door. It don't work that way. First of all, you've got to know the culture, whether it's from here to Texas. And by the way, you think a northerner going to Texas won't have a hard time? Yeah, And you got to know the people, and you got to know the culture, and these people are not going to welcome you. They weren't waiting for you to come there. Now, there are some countries that are very responsive to you being there, like Africa, where are you going? But the problem there is they're responsive to everybody. So now let's make sure that they're not just accepting another God or another religion. You understand? The problem's everywhere. And so you need to know that these people will lift you up in bad times. When you're down, they'll be up. They'll keep encouraging you. And you have somebody to encourage. It's real critical. See, you can divide responsibilities so that people can do what they do best. If you go in pairs, you can divide the responsibility so that people can do what they do best. A good example. You might be, I don't want to use Ken and the man that they went with, the Patties. Our son-in-law, Ken, he couldn't fundraise if his life depended on. Ken can't even talk good. He doesn't present himself well. Ken,
tell him almost what this one talks, he doesn't talk well.
Now, Miss Andrea could speak to the word, but not Ken. That's not Ken. And Dave Patty, y'all haven't met, he's charismatic. He'll make you sign your car over to him, you know, when he gets done talking. You'll sell your house and give it to him. He's just a salesman. And he's a very handsome man, and he's very charismatic, and he's got contacts out there from out west. And they run in a wealthy social set, which brought a lot of wealth to that ministry. Ken and Andrew are poor folks from Podunk Holler, you know, Ken's inner city Chicago. However, they could relate to the people if his life depended on it. Ken Pitcher loves those people with every fiber of his body. And he's patient. He'll sit and talk to them day after day and year after year. Patty, let's go. You know? Ken. So, guess what they do? Dave is all the management and all that kind of stuff, fundraising. Ken is the people. He's the guy that's the preacher and teacher. Now, Dave teaches in the seminary, well, they call it stodge. He teaches in the stodge, but he just teaches. You understand the difference? It's a great relationship. Now, the woman, she's a dingbat. she's kind of a dingbat. She's a music major, got a master's degree in music, so she's a real asset there. She plays the piano. But she's disorganized, and she's got these kids that are disorganized, and then, guess whose misorganization? Andrea. So here's Andrea, just everything organized, and, you know, everything just going. And Connie's like, Andrea, do you think I ought to do so and so and so and so and so? And they just make a great, they're just great friends. And it's just funny. It amazes me to watch how that has just done. I thought, that would never be successful if Ken, if it was dependent. Now, God would raise up somebody else if he wanted that work. If it was, but Patty is the guy for that. And Ken is the guy. But I said to Dwayne, we were talking the other day, and I said, you know, if they, Patty left Chet, nobody would miss him except the money flows.
Yeah.
If Ken Pitcher left Chet, all of Eastern Europe will cry. You guys have no idea. You have no idea the impact that Andrew and Ken Pitcher has put on Eastern Europe. And he says, I'm in a new time at Life, Mother. Now, I am the older pastor looked up to. He said, I don't know that I like this change. All these young pastors, some of them that he's trained and sent out now. And it's just, it's been a whole, he said, I'm walking in a whole new time up. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're no longer beating the bushes. You're now the mature leader. And but do you understand the lives? You know why? He don't mind touching a drunk on the street and bringing him in. He loves him just as much as he does the mayor of the city, who can be friends and helps. He just loves people. But if he didn't have Dave Patty, he wouldn't be free to do all this. You understand?
Yeah.
So by going as with these two, it has just worked out great. So you need to do it. You can divide it like the responsibilities, see, you can divide. One is administration, in their case, versus personal programs. Administration, personal programs. Here's another one. How about this one? Finances versus teaching. Somebody has to keep up with the finances, you know. It's got to be somebody. Now, if Ken Pitcher had to do that, you'd be in trouble. He'd lose all the checks, and he wouldn't even know where he put the book, and he'd break the ballpoint pen, and you know, that's not his thing. No, here's another one. How about with women? Medical advice. What about sewing? Maybe you don't sew. Andrea Pitcher hated to sew. I made her learn to sew. She's kind of where she likes crafts on her own. She crochets and stuff like that, but she don't like to sew. So somebody got to sew, right? I mean, the pants still rip and the buttons fall off, you know. Oh, she's got the little kit like that. And how about music? You know, how about this in the ministry? You need somebody until you can raise up enough kids. Our grandchildren are just about ready to step up and take those places, but hey, all these years have gone by. You need, and by the way, if you... I don't know what they'd do without Andrea medically. She has literally become a doctor, I tell her. The other night she called me and had a question. This woman called her from Slovak, I think, has a little baby and something was wrong. I said, hold it, Mr. Mendandis. Isn't that woman an RN? She said, yeah. I said, why is she calling you? Why is she calling Andrea? She's a registered nurse. Well, she just wanted to make sure she was right, I guess. Mother, what do you think? I said, no, she's not right. This is what I would suggest, blah, blah, blah. But let me call a friend of ours who's a medical doctor and see if I'm on the right track. So he said, yes, do this, but add this. So I went back, and she said, I think we can get that in Poland and blah, 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 you know. And okay. And I thought, what is that for you? The medical clearinghouse over there or something, you know? And but you understand what I mean. This woman's over in Slovak, but at least she's got a friend over here in Czech she can call. You see the difference in that thing? So it's real critical. Letter D, you'll have somebody to hold up your arms in the battle. You'll have somebody to hold up your arms in the battle. It gets very tiring in the ministry. George Grace could not go preach at other churches. George Grace could not take a vacation. George Grace couldn't get sick with a sore throat and not speak. Why can he do that? And we don't even miss him. Hello. He's been surrounded himself with trustworthy men that can step in the pulpit. And I love having God because I like to hear different people preach. I love George, but isn't it nice? Isn't this nice? See how they compliment each other? And by the way, do I like some of them better than others? Yep. Sure, you do too. You understand? But isn't that nice that we have that? You know why? It didn't start that way. One man came.
He was just lucky two young couples stepped up beside him and was able to carry on. First Bible would not be him. Now, God would have brought other people. You understand that. But God saw that this man did not have the strength to do many things. He was only a promoter. Wayne Mowing was only a promoter and a soul winner. He did not have the financial accountability. He did not have the maturity or the teaching accountability. He did not know how to organize and start. Hello, here I am with all of my abilities. Move aside, and my husband with his steady, I can manage, I can take care of the finances, I can do this. And y'all don't know Wendell and Tice. We just saw them. They're coming back. They were the three couples, really. Bob Marsh started always attending, and Bob always was teaching and all. Marsh never did anything. She's a quiet person. But us, and you don't know, you're going to meet Wendell Tice, and Wayne really was the nucleus. And they're coming back for the dedication of the new building. They'd have been here for the 40th anniversary, but we had to make some decisions what was best to do for that, since we knew this other one was coming up too. Now, Tice called me last week. Now, have you got a date yet? Well, no, you're going to be here. I promise you, you're not going to get left out. But you understand, God brought these people so that we could complement where Wayne was weak. And that's what you do. And you say, well, I know y'all are hearing this, but if you don't remember anything else, talk to your husbands about this. Plan to go with somebody you can work with, somebody you trust. I'm telling you, I've watched it succeed over and over and over, and I've watched people go by themselves and fail. My son John is coming home from the mission field in Romania. Is he a failure? Wasn't a failure, but he went by himself. Hello, he went by himself. And John does not have the ability to do certain things. I know him well. I have to raise him. And he is, in fact, they just got back. They're back in America. And I really felt bad for John. I believe if he had come to us for advice, we could have given him different advice, and John would still be in Romania today. I don't know what God said. He's not getting out of the ministry. He just knows that God shut that door for him, and I believe it's true. I believe it's true. And I think he went wrong. And I know your husbands think they are God's anointed, and they don't need anything else or anybody else. Hello, they do. They do. Even if you have a church in Rochester, go with a friend. Go with a friend and start our nucleus. Take 10 people or 2 people or whatever. I'm telling y'all, it just makes a vast difference. You have that strength. Best if you can't speak the language. Sure, it's nice to hear a voice speak English. And don't even think you can buy English books to read. So the Reader's Digest goes through all of Europe. You know how that goes. Last, on number 5, be who you are. Be who you are. Letter A, God has a work for me to do. God has a good work for me to do. Letter A, God has a good work for me to do. 1 Thessalonians 4:11. You probably taught it to your children. Do your own work. Study to be quiet, to do your own work with your own hands as I have commanded you. That's my kids' last verse. Every time they come to me, I'd say, ah, they come to tattle. No, study to be quiet. Do your own business with your own hands. Child's verse. You should have it memorized. 1 Thessalonians 4:11. God has a good work for me to do. B, let your husband do what he's called to do. Let your husband do what he's called to do and get out of the way. When I married an airman, a flyboy, lands of Goshen, I never thought I'd be where I am today. Never even thought I'd be living in New York State. And it's never thought it. But I'm from a different era. Whatever your husband does, that's what you do. Doesn't matter if he's a shoe salesman, you make him the best shoe salesman. If he was, so it never crossed my mind to say, don't do that, or why would you move to New York, or well, no, what? You're going to what? And you're going to go where? And you're going to lobby? What's that? I mean, no, you shouldn't do that. It just never crossed my mind. It just, I'm from an era. Well, your man does, you do. You ought to be from that era. You ought to be from, and let him be what God wants him to be. Now, I sure do like to try to help Dwayne, I've told you. I try to be his Holy Spirit frequently, and every time thank God he doesn't listen to me. And he'll say, Nancy, you're not my Holy Spirit. I say, but I'm trying so hard to be. Won't you listen to me? And I found out after a lot of years, God didn't need my help. He didn't need my help. Let him be. See, You can't do everything. You can't do everything. The ministry doesn't rise and fall on you, so don't think it does. And if you try to make it so, then you're a selfish person that's going to cause the ministry to fail. Let me tell you, if you know how to do everything in the ministry and you don't train somebody else to do it, you're wrong. You should be able to walk out the door and somebody step in your shoes and do it better than you. The teacher, the student, I always say, should be better than the teacher if the teacher's done a good job. I tell Andrea, I'll walk in your shadow. And there's no greater honor than to walk in your daughter's shadow. The student should be better than the teacher. Do you understand? So if you're in the church and if you have a Sunday school class, start teaching somebody else to take over that class as soon as you can. And go on to the next one. Or at least let them work with you. If you don't, I believe that everyone in the room should know how to teach if they have the ability to teach. Even if it's a 5-minute object lesson or a teach the Bible lesson. I think you should, if you are church treasurer, somebody else should be know how to do that. It should work with you. You should have an assistant. So if you get sick or have to leave, and pass it on to that person as soon as you can and leave. Don't keep that ministry forever if you can train somebody else. That don't mean you can't be involved. In fact, every time I train mine, they leave and go to the mission field or something. I'm going to quit training them. I have picked me a new director because all my directors now have gone off and done other things. And so I've picked me a new one. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet. I've told her. She's like, I can't do that. Yes, you are. And you know why? I need to keep these people in training. You're always a training. If I'm the only one who knows how to direct, if I'm the only one who knows how to do lights, if I'm the only one who knows how to work over in our ministry, I'm a loser. I'm a loser. You need to be now, when you get to the foreign field, it takes a long time because you got to wait till you lead somebody to the Lord and they begin to get grounded. But as soon as they do, start teaching them. The ministry doesn't rise and fall on you. I used to think it did. And if it's God's ministry, he's going to put the right person there. And it can be just anybody. I'm going to close with this. A little girl stood near a small church from which she'd been turned away because it was too crowded. I can't go to Sunday school, she sobbed as the pastor walked by. Seeing her shabby, unkempt appearance, the pastor guessed the reason. Taking her by the hand, he took her inside and found a place for her in the Sunday school class. The child was so happy that they found a room for her. And she went to bed that night thinking of all the children who had no place to worship. Some 2 years later, this little girl lay dead in one of the poor tenement buildings. Her parents called for the kind-hearted preacher who had befriended their daughter to handle the final arrangements. As her poor little body was being moved, a worn and crumpled red purse was found, which seemed to have been rummaged from some trash dump. Inside was found 54 cents. Or 57 cents, and a note scribbled in childish handwritings which read, "This is to help build the little church bigger so more children can go to Sunday school." For 2 years, she had been saving this offering of love. When the pastor tearfully read that note, he knew instantly what he would do. Carrying this note and the cracked red pocketbook to the pulpit, he told the story of the unselfish love and devotion. He challenged his deacons to get busy and raise enough money for the larger building. But the story doesn't end there. A newspaper learned of the story and published it. A wealthy realtor read it and offered them a parcel of land for many thousands of dollars. When told that the church could not pay so much, he offered to sell it to the little church for 57 cents. Church members made large donations. Checks came from far and wide. Within 5 years, the little girl's gift had increased to $250,000, a huge sum of money, because this was near the turn of the 19th century. Her unselfish love had paid large dividends. When you are in the city of Philadelphia, look up Temple Baptist Church with a seating capacity of 3,300. And be sure to visit Temple University, where thousands of students are educated. Have a look, too, at the Good Samaritan Hospital and a Sunday school building which houses hundreds of beautiful children, built so no child in the area will never again be left outside during Sunday school time. In one of the rooms of this building, you may see the picture of a sweet face of a little girl whose 57 cents so sacrificially saved, made such remarkable history. Along the side of it is a portrait of her kind pastor, Dr. Russell Conwell, author of the book Aces of Diamonds. This is a true story, which goes to show what 57 cents can do. And you think God's ministry rests upon you? He doesn't need us. He allows us to work so that we get the benefit. I gave you your last handouts called Marriage and the Ministry. Nancy Smith is over in, pastor's wife over in the Syracuse. And it's a great thing about working in marriage and ministry. And I want to end with this. Last, what's next, ladies? Forgive, what's next? Make garbage soup, what's next? Serve alone, what's last? Now, if I were going to pick out of this the two that I feel are the most important, I would say last and don't go alone. I didn't ask Andrea that. I should have asked her. But I would say last and don't go alone. Lord, I know, again, nothing profound has been said here, but I know it came from somebody successful on the mission field. I know she said it had to be done in this order. And I know that if these women even can comprehend some of this and put it into their lives, that God's going to use them greater. He'll use them anytime, but Lord, they'll use them greater. Father, I want to be used. And Lord, I know I'm in my waning years, but Lord, I want to be used of you greater than ever as a testimony that just because you get old, you don't have to quit serving God. And Father, I pray for a blessing on all of us that are married to men that love you best. In Jesus' name, amen. Now let's do this. I want you to go over to your meal. And after we eat our meal, I will take any question and answer over there. And we won't hold up Donna with her meal because she wants us to stay pretty well on schedule for that because of the way it's being served today. But we'll have plenty of time over there for question and answer.
I know, me too. Me too.
Thank you. Maybe so they made too. And they're frustrated. I think that's frustrating because they don't see you for who you are. They see, they get these visions.
Yeah.
You know, they're
oh,
so.
Right. All
right. Stuff. Right. And the reality, that's it. The reality factor is just so. Not there.
No.
It's just, no.
Hello? Is anybody home in there? Anybody listening?
It's so true. It's so true. And they just don't think they're the visionaries and we're the workers.
So you guys.
Oh, totally. Totally. But Jeff is pretty, he's, I have to give him credit, especially recently. He's really gotten better at, after I lost my mind after him, Nathan. It scared him. It really scared him. And he has gotten a lot better since then because it scared him that I would completely collapse. You know, that the possibility of me completely falling apart is real. You know what I mean? And I think that was what that did. Though I'd never want to go back to that, I'm thankful that that happened. I am. Because he saw it. They don't understand the reality of having people that are so dependent on you, and it's 24 hours a day. It doesn't stop. Exactly. You had to. And that's the thing, if they don't have to, they don't. You just do it. Right. Else has to go.
Else.
If you do that, it's
not.
It's not.
I'm like, so come here.